Hello, this is Nicolene Ambrose with the Tri-County Journal for Wednesday, February 10th. First article, IHSA Board announces sports schedule for remainder of 2020-21. The IHSA Board of Directors met for a special board meeting on January 27th, where the board provided an updated sports schedule and other guidance for the remainder of the 2020-21 school year. We understand the high level of anticipation surrounding today's announcement, along with the scrutiny that will accompany it, said IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson. Ultimately, the board adhered to its stated goals throughout the pandemic, providing an opportunity for every IHSA student athlete to compete safely this year and maximizing opportunities for traditional IHSA spring sports after they lost their entire season a year ago. I recognize that many schools and coaches could likely offer a tweak here or there that would have, in their opinion, made it better for their schools or sport. Our board faced an impossible task with a litany of factors. They were conscientious in considering every possibility, and I believe their decisions today are a positive step for the mental, emotional, and physical well-being of our students. We are excited to channel our energy into creating as many positive experiences for Illinois high school students as we can between now and the end of this extraordinary school year. The board is considering state series competition for traditional IHSA spring sports only. Dance and cheerleading will be allowed to conduct virtual sectional and state final meets, as they will record their performances and submit them to be judged. The board wants to do everything in their power to prevent spring sports from going two consecutive years with no postseason IHSA play, said Anderson. There are obviously no guarantees, as risk levels by sport and local region mitigation statuses will factor significantly. Postseason could mean being limited to a regional or sectional level of competition, but we have not ruled out the idea of playing a full state tournament in these traditional spring sports, if possible. The overwhelming feedback we have heard from athletic directors and coaches was that returning to play in all sports should be the main goal. With the exception of football, which requires individuals to participate in practice on 12 different days, all sports will be required to hold practice on 7 different days prior to holding a contest. Holding multiple practices on a date does not impact that timeline. If student athletes transition from basketball or boys swimming and diving into football, they will need to participate in practice on 10 different days prior to their first contest. Winter sports contests could begin as early as today, dependent on when a school's region reached the appropriate mitigation status and when they began practices. The IHSA Sports Medicine Advisory Committee, SMAC, issued a statement reminding all student athletes, coaches, and schools on the importance of acclimatization. The IHSA SMAC reminds member schools that student athletes may need additional conditioning in order to participate in a full schedule this season. In addition to season practice requirements, care needs to be given to each student's individual acclimation as they return to play. When building schedules, attention needs to be given to academic pressure, changes from in-person to remote learning, changes between tiers of mitigation, time spent traveling to events, appropriate time to practice learn the sport between games, etc., to ensure the student experience truly enhances the academic day. The IHSA guidelines require all student athletes to participate in mask wearing, with the exception of swimming and diving, gymnasts on an apparatus, and outdoor events where social distancing can occur, and for all game personnel not participating in the contest to also wear masks and adhere to social distancing. We still have regions of the state that need to make strides in order to be able to play basketball this winter, said Anderson. That underscores the importance of our schools following all the mitigations and precautions. We need to maintain a positive trajectory, not only to get winter sports going, but to make sure we do not have any regions regress before spring and summer sports have their opportunity. We can all do our part by wearing a mask and socially distancing. The board also agreed to consider other participation opportunities for a given sport, like basketball, if the sport is unable to be played in a specific region. We have said from day one that if and when we were allowed to play again this year, the situation would be fluid, said Anderson. We don't feel great about the notion of some schools falling behind based on their region status, but also recognize that we are running out of time and can't afford to hold back the regions that can play. In October, the board ruled that students who play sports, football, boys soccer, girls volleyball, that were displaced from their traditional season could participate on high school and non-school teams simultaneously. The board affirmed this position in Wednesday's meeting with additional sports moving out of their traditional seasons and also ruled that girls and boys basketball players will need to cease non-school team participation within 7 days of their first high school game. All sports that are out of season can conduct contact days through June 4th. Contact days are limited to 3 days per week per sport with a maximum of 6 hours of contact per week with no interscholastic competition. The IHSA Board of Directors issued the following statement on the day's events. Unprecedented circumstances create extraordinary decisions. The IHSA Board of Directors faced one of the most difficult decisions in the Association's 100-plus year history today. Please know that we did so with great diligence, empathy, and understanding. There were an immense number of factors that went into today's decisions. We knew there would be obstacles no matter what we decided. Whether those hurdles include overlapping seasons for multi-sport athletes, equity between sports, preseason acclimatization guidelines, the prioritization of spring sports, facility conflicts for schools, officiating, and that is just naming a few. Please know that each potential roadblock was recognized and given consideration. The IHSA membership, like our state, is incredibly large and diverse. Each board member brought different concerns to the table that impacted their own school or region differently. There was never going to be a one-size-fits-all solution to playing 25 sports seasons in a little over 4 months. What did occur was collaboration and camaraderie. Each board member may not have been able to have all of their specific concerns addressed, but we worked together to produce a schedule and plan that we believe will work for our student athlete. The article includes a table listing the sport, IDPH risk, when practices start, how many practice dates before games are required, whether or not there is participation in the state series, and the end date. Those sports listed as at lower risk include boys swimming and diving, dance, cheerleading, boys and girls bowling, girls gymnastics, badminton, boys gymnastics, baseball, softball, boys tennis, boys and girls track and field. Sports that are listed as having a moderate risk include boys soccer, girls volleyball, boys and girls water polo, girls soccer, and boys volleyball. Sports listed as having a higher risk include boys and girls basketball, football, boys and girls lacrosse, and wrestling. Next article. State directs excess vaccine from pharmacy partnership program to eligible recipients in phase 1B of the vaccination effort in Illinois. In order to increase the limited supply of vaccine to eligible recipients, The state of Illinois is working with Walgreens and CVS pharmacies to temporarily redirect approximately 97,000 COVID-19 vaccine doses that have not yet been used for the Federal Pharmacy Partnership Program, or PPP, to providers across the state. After this transfer, approximately 110,000 doses will still remain available for the federal effort to vaccinate long-term care residents. The federal program is administering approximately 36,000 doses per week. IDPH will continue to closely monitor the program, and additional doses will be directed to the program if needed or if the rate of vaccination accelerates. Doses were intentionally allocated to the federal PPP to ensure the program would have more than enough doses to fully vaccinate all long-term care facilities. Allocations to the federal PPP were based on total number of beds in each facility and assumed full participation by residents and staff in the vaccine program. As the pharmacy partners work down the current surplus, the state will closely monitor their progress and direct additional vaccine to the program as needed. The doses will be used to supplement this limited supply of vaccine for the more than 3.2 million Illinoisans who qualify for Phase 1B of the state's COVID-19 vaccination plan. Long-term care facilities remain a top priority in the state's COVID-19 vaccination plan. To supplement the federal PPP, the Illinois Department of Human Services is sending at least 8 teams of nurses, volunteers, and support staff to assisted living facilities, intermediate care facilities for people with developmental disabilities, and group homes. Teams are expected to be deployed and in facilities this week. Facilities that are in the final stages of the federal program have been offered the opportunity to have a state team visit their site in place of the federal teams. We want to make sure every dose allocated to Illinois can be used as quickly and equitably as possible, said IDPH Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike. Long-term care residents and staff remain a top priority, and we will ensure there will be as many doses readily available to those facilities as the PPP can administer each week. The state is grateful for its partnerships with hundreds of providers, and we are directing excess doses that otherwise would be sitting in the freezer 3 weeks from now to locations across Illinois to vaccinate our Phase 1B residents. The federal PPP includes Walgreens and CVS pharmacies and is responsible for scheduling and administering COVID-19 vaccinations to long-term care residents and staff. The state is working closely with our partners to vaccinate our long-term care residents and staff as quickly as possible. Of the 97,000 doses being reallocated, 80,000 doses from the CVS portion of the PPP and approximately 17,000 doses from the Walgreens portion are being directed to their respective retail stores. For information on how to make an appointment to receive the vaccine, updates on the state's plan and eligibility, and answers to frequently asked questions about the COVID-19 vaccination, go to the website coronavirus.illinois.gov. Next, the obituaries. Dale H. Sebbins. Dale H. Sebbins, 94, of Clinton, passed away Wednesday, January 27th at Mercy One, Clinton. Funeral services were held 11 a.m. Tuesday, February 2nd at the Clinton Chapel Snell Zornig Funeral Homes and Crematory. Burial was in the Oakland Cemetery with military honors conducted by the Clinton AMVETS Post No. 28. Memorials can be made to the First Congregational Church or the Isaac Walton League. Virginia A. Green. Virginia Ann Green, 94, of East Peoria and formerly of Kimmendy, passed away at 3:52 p.m. Saturday, January 23rd at the Generations at Riverview Assisted Living in East Peoria. Private family services will be held at the McGriff and Triplett Funeral Home in Kinmundy, with Pastor David Kunker officiating, and burial will follow at the Evergreen Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Madison Street Historic Preservation or the Evergreen Cemetery. Michael J. Brown. Michael James Brown, 64, of Hammond, passed away on Tuesday, January 26th at his residence. Funeral services were held at 1 p.m. Monday, February 1st at the Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home in Atwood. Burial followed in the Hammond Cemetery with military graveside rites accorded. Visitation was held from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, January 31st at the funeral home. Memorials are suggested to the village of Hammond in memory of Michael Brown. Wilma L. Miles. Wilma L. Miles, 92, of Decatur, formerly of Tuscola, passed away on Thursday, January 28th. Private family services will be held. Burial will be in the Monticello Township Cemetery. Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home is assisting the family with the arrangements. James K. Threat. James K. Threat, 90, of Savoy, passed away at 2:05 a.m. on Saturday, January 30th at the Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Private graveside services will be held at the Tuscola Township Cemetery in Tuscola. Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home is entrusted with the arrangements. Memorials may be given to Emmanuel Lutheran Church, St. John Lutheran Church, or St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Next article. Former GOP State Senator Sam McCann indicted. A former Republican state senator and Conservative Party candidate for governor on Wednesday joined the list of ex-state officials who have been indicted. Springfield area lawmaker Sam McCann, who frequently butted heads with Republican ex-governor Bruce Rauner and eventually challenged him as a third-party candidate in 2018, was indicted on charges of fraud, money laundering, and tax evasion related to his alleged use of campaign funds for personal expenses, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Central District of Illinois. The indictment alleges that from May 2015 to June 2020, McCann engaged in a scheme to convert more than $200,000 in contributions and donations made to his campaign committees to pay himself and make personal purchases. Further, McCann concealed his fraud from donors, the public, the Illinois State Board of Elections, and law enforcement authorities, according to the news release. McCann, of Plainview, was a state senator from 2011 until January 2019, following his unsuccessful third-party run for governor in which he received about 4.2% of the vote, or 192,527 votes. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, McCann organized several political committees which received over $5 million in donations. But in several instances, McCann used some of that money to purchase personal vehicles, pay personal debts, make mortgage payments, and pay himself, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. That included $60,000 spent on a 27 Ford Expedition and a 2018 Ford F-250 pickup truck, and he later used campaign funds to pay for fuel and insurance for the vehicles. The indictment also details an alleged scheme in which McCann purchased two recreational vehicles, later establishing an account with an RV rental business in Ohio through which McCann rented the vehicles to himself, paid for by campaign funds. That also led to a tax evasion charge. McCann caused a total of approximately $62,666 in campaign funds to be used to pay the rental cost of the vehicles. The rental business retained approximately $9,838 for commission and paid McCann, as the owner, approximately $52,827 by direct deposit to McCann's personal checking account. McCann reimbursed the campaign accounts $18,000, resulting in more than $77,000 in campaign funds used to buy and rent from himself, according to the news release from the U.S. attorney. McCann also allegedly cut himself a $20,000 cashier's check from the campaign account in 2016 to pay off a 2011 loan. From May 2015 to August 2020, McCann allegedly spent approximately $64,750 in campaign funds on two separate personal mortgage loans. His failed campaign for governor was lucrative as well, according to the indictment. McCann allegedly caused the Conservative Party of Illinois to issue approximately $187,000 in payments to himself personally and an additional $52,282 in payments for payroll taxes through June 2020, according to the news release. Using a payroll service, McCann was allegedly able to conceal himself as the payee for the expenditures from the campaign account. The indictment also alleges the Conservative Party standard bearer spent $50,000 in campaign funds on credit card payments related to a family vacation in Colorado and charges from Apple iTunes, Amazon, a skeet and trap club, Cabela's, Scheels, Best Buy, a gun store, and cash withdrawals. McCann is scheduled to appear via telephone conference at 2 p.m. February 16th before U.S. Magistrate Judge Tom Shanzel Haskins for arraignment. If convicted, McCann could face penalties up to 20 years in prison for each of the 7 counts of wire fraud and 1 count of money laundering he faces. For tax evasion, he could serve up to 5 years. Next article. State of Illinois and ASCM launch first-of-its-kind training program to prepare residents for jobs fueled by growing e-commerce industry. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, DCEO, today announced a new training program designed to prepare more residents for roles in Illinois' growing supply chain management industry. In partnership with the Association for Supply Chain Management, ASCM, the Illinois Supply Chain Management Training Program seeks to match residents who have become unemployed or underemployed during the COVID-19 pandemic with training for careers in supply chain management, one of the fastest growing fields in the state. DCEO's Office of Employment and Training is providing $250,000 for the ASCM pilots through federal funds to support dislocated workers under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, WIOA. The pilots are targeting dislocated workers who have been impacted by COVID-19 and will help Illinois residents across the state seize on the growth of e-commerce, shipping, and logistics and transportation industries in Illinois. As our workforce is reshaped by the pandemic, two things have never been clearer: the need to invest in workforce programs that prepare our workers for the jobs of the future, as well as strategic programs that can support our health response, which relies heavily on the supply chain, said Governor J.B. Pritzker. This innovative training model by the State of Illinois and ASCM responds to these needs and builds on the work we started from day one of this crisis to support Illinois workers and communities as we work hard to build back our economy. Since the pandemic hit, the rapid growth of e-commerce has generated an unprecedented demand for new skilled workers, with nearly 2,000 supply chain-focused job opportunities in Illinois unfulfilled today. In the next 5 years, more than 500,000 supply chain jobs will be added nationally. The program pairs a response to the demand for new talent today and in the years ahead with the State of Illinois' ongoing efforts to create new job training opportunities for residents and those especially impacted during COVID-19. As our communities across the state continue to feel the impact of the pandemic, we've made it our focus from day one to invest in training that will help workers get back on their feet and into well-paid, in-demand roles of today, said DCEO Director Aaron Guthrie. Illinois is already home to one of the most talented workforces in the country and is a leader in the national supply chain. Through this new partnership with ASCM, we will develop a diverse pipeline of talent that allows companies to plan for long-term growth here while ensuring our residents can seize the thousands of jobs coming to Illinois in the years ahead. Set to begin next month, the program will be piloted in some of Illinois' largest supply chain hubs, Southern Cook County, Metro East, and Southern Illinois. An initial 250 participants will begin a one-week virtual training program with industry-aligned curriculum from ASCM covering topics such as inventory management, logistics, and consumer distribution principles and basic management skills. At the end of the training, participants will receive a certificate in essential supply chain management skills. Those who complete training will have an opportunity to work with their local workforce agency to apply for supply chain careers available in the area. The ASCM Foundation is committed to strengthening supply chains around the world by attracting more people to the industry and providing the education and training necessary for career success, said ASCM CEO Abe Eshkenazi. While COVID-19 has posed unprecedented challenges on everyone, we know that Illinois is still a leader in the national supply chain and a top destination for skilled talent. Working alongside the state of Illinois and hiring companies, we'll bring industry-based training to help facilitate career opportunities for Illinoisans who are ready to take the next steps in their careers. The expanded training opportunities build on continued investments by the state to respond to record unemployment created by COVID-19 and to help dislocated workers return to the job site. Last fall, Governor Pritzker announced a $16.6 million investment for Illinoisans who lost their jobs during COVID-19, leveraging USDOL grant funding to create training and hiring opportunities for as many as 1,300 residents over the next year. Next article, IDES announces progress in implementing Continued Assistance Act. The Illinois Department of Employment Security, IDES, today announced programmatic updates and changes to several unemployment programs contained within the Continued Assistance Act, CAA, signed into law on December 27, 2020, and the progress the department is making in implementing the wide-ranging changes to these programs. These updates and changes, outlined below, will impact the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Compensation, FPUC, program, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, PUA, program, PUA overpayments and waivers, and the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation, PEUC, program, in addition to the creation of the Mixed Earner Unemployment Compensation, MEUC, program. The details for each of these updates and changes for each program follow. The article provides the details for the changes in each program. This has been Nicolene Ambrose reading with you today. I've enjoyed it, and I hope to read with you again soon.